Hey, this is Paul Wilson of Karate Cafe. I'm not really a leading martial arts podcast figure, respected the world over for my opinion. But I do play one on the internet, and when I'm not doing that, I listen to Practical Defense. And now, so are you.
Welcome to the Practical Defense Podcast, where you'll learn practical approaches to staying safe in our increasingly dangerous urban environments. I am your host, Alex Addix, and this is episode 196, Diving for Cover. This week our topic is a technique for hitting the deck in the event of an explosion. It can also be used for getting to the ground quickly if someone starts shooting in your direction and there is no other cover. There are three versions of the technique: a solo version, taking a principal to the ground and protecting him or her, and for the most part this is going to be a family member, and covering a small child or infant. I'm going to put a disclaimer in here. People can get hurt if you choose to practice these techniques. Therefore, I do not recommend you practice them without proper live instruction. This podcast, with just my verbal description, is not enough training and should not be considered training. What I'm going to do is give an overview and introduction to the techniques so that you know what to look for when you do seek training. So where can you get real training? The best place I know is a Jim Wagner certified instructor. These techniques are taught as part of the Terrorism Survival course. There may be other courses under different systems that teach similar techniques. These are also taught as part of executive protection or bodyguarding courses. The chances of being caught in an explosion are slim. However, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't have potentially life-saving skills. The other reality of our current environment is that domestic terrorism is on the rise around the world. Domestic terrorism is when a resident and citizen of a country attacks their own homeland. For comparison, 9/11 was an external terrorism, and the Oklahoma City bombing was a domestic terrorism. Eco-terrorism also often falls into the broad category of domestic terrorism. I'm going to stop myself there before I spin off into a tangent. I have plans to cover domestic terrorism in a future episode. But kind of the impetus of why I selected this topic was that there was a recent failed assassination attempt that made the news. A team of operatives linked to Iran were planning to assassinate the UN ambassador from Saudi Arabia. The plot was foiled in October of 2011. The plan included bombing the ambassador's favorite restaurant while he ate. If he'd succeeded, there would have been a tremendous amount of collateral damage, including anyone else dining in the restaurant. That is an important point in this discussion. You do not have to be the target. You could be simply in the vicinity of the target and get caught up in the event. For example, you could work in a high-value target if it's a building. You could commute by the target. You could work in the building next to a high-value target. Or, if the target's a person, you could be on the same bus, train, subway, or road. In the example of the UN ambassador, you could be in the same restaurant, but it could easily be the same store or coffee house. This all falls into the category of wrong place, wrong time, and stuff happens. So with that, we'll be right back with our discussion on diving for cover.
The legal aftermath of using a gun in self-defense can be traumatic and expensive. Get help and peace of mind through the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. Network members receive much-needed financial and legal support right after a self-defense incident. They also receive education in the form of DVDs from some of the top names in the business, along with having access to a nationwide pool of attorneys. Learn about membership at www.armedcitizensnetwork.org.
Welcome back. Before we get into the specifics of the techniques, we need to discuss some principles. When it comes to explosions and gunfire, the ground is your friend. This is one of the extremely rare circumstances where you'll actually hear me say that going to the ground is a good idea in a confrontation. Bombs and grenades blow mostly up and out. A much smaller percentage of the shrapnel flies parallel to the ground, and the further away you are, the better the ground is for you. That means if hardened cover is not available, your safest place is as low to the ground as you can get. Now, before anyone and everyone emails me, I did watch the Mythbusters episode on grenades. If you noticed, they placed the targets 5 feet, less than 2 meters, from the epicenter of the explosion. This was the minimum safe distance not to die from the concussive wave alone. Even at that range, they noted that there was a significant reduction in the amount of shrapnel flying out at less than 1 foot from the ground, which is 30 centimeters. They also said, despite their results, they would hit the deck if they were caught that close to a grenade. They called the myth busted because it was written as an absolute, saying that hitting the deck would keep you safe. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that hitting the deck is the safest place in a really bad situation. I offer no guarantees, and we even discuss body positioning to help protect against those pieces of shrapnel that do travel close to the ground. Continuing, another guiding principle you've heard me say in the past is distance is your friend. You want to be as far away from the epicenter as possible. Let's jump into our Wayback Machine and travel back to your high school geometry class and the lessons on angles. If the explosion is at the vertex with the rays extending outwards, it is readily apparent that you want to be as low and as far away as possible to minimize your exposure to shrapnel. The explosion often causes other damage in flying debris such as plaster, wood, and glass. With these things in the air, again, you are better off on the ground. So here's the first technique. One way to get the ground faster is to bend over at the waist, meaning 90 degrees. In a fraction of a second, you can cut your silhouette in half. Once bent over, shoot to the ground. Here, bending over has the added benefit of getting you closer to the ground so that hitting the ground will cause less of an impact. When you shoot to the ground, you can either go straight down by putting your hands down and stretching out your legs behind you to the rear, or you can take a short dive forward. Which method you use depends upon your athleticism and the environment. The principle is to get to the ground as quickly as possible without injuring yourself. Now let's talk about positioning your body once it's on the ground. This is kind of an of course statement, but for the sake of completeness, you want to lay face down. For your head, you want your eyes closed, but pointing to the ground. This means nose down. Don't turn your head to the side to get it closer. You want to protect your eyes from debris. Keep them closed and pointed to the ground. Again, I'll take a quick break for a disclaimer. I want to express that these techniques require in-person training and practice. Do not practice these techniques on your own. So once you're on the ground, your hands cover the back of your neck. You want to protect the spot where your spine enters your skull. That's a valuable point that you want to cover. Keep your elbows tucked in tightly to your body. Also, you want to open your mouth. Sounds a little strange, right? Well, explosions cause a concussive wave that can pop your eardrums. To help protect your hearing, open your mouth to increase the chance of the pressure equalizing before it ruins your hearing. There's no guarantee, but it helps. The final guiding principle is to point your legs towards the explosion. This serves two purposes. First, putting your feet towards the explosion exposes the smallest silhouette to the danger. If you're all lined up behind your feet, that's a smaller area than, say, if you're lined up sideways. Now, second, your feet and legs become a buffer for your torso and head against any shrapnel that does fly out at ground level. Generally speaking, it's far better to get hit by shrapnel in the foot or leg than your torso and risk puncturing a major organ. The greatest vulnerability in your legs are your femoral arteries. Now, these are closest to the surface on your inner thighs. For this reason, we keep our legs and feet together. So here's a quick summary of the principles for individual diving for cover. Bend over. Hit the deck. Head down. Nose down. Eyes closed. Hands over the back of your neck. Mouth open. Feet towards the explosion. Feet and legs together. That's it. Now we're going to shift from protecting ourselves to protecting someone under our care. This technique comes from bodyguarding, or executive protection. All of the same principles we just discussed apply to this technique as well. The difference is how they're implemented and what you do as the protector. Again, this technique is more complicated than the individual, plus you're going to take another person to the ground. And again, As always, I stress that you should not practice this technique on your own. Seek professional instruction. If you do it wrong, someone can get hurt. We'll start with protecting another adult. Now, first, position yourself between the principal and the explosion. You want your chest to his or her back, and then your back to the danger. This means you are both facing away from the explosion. Next is hand positioning. With one hand, reach around the principal's waist, and then the other hand goes up on the back of the principal's neck. You're covering the vulnerable point where the spine enters the skull with one hand and creating a fulcrum with the other. Then, bend the principal over at the waist. While you do this, yell, "Down! Down! Down!" Then, that's followed by using one of your legs to sweep the leg out from under the principal and take him or her to the ground, face down. You're executing a front takedown on the person. This is really dangerous, especially if the person cannot or does not get his hands out in front of him to break the fall. This technique is designed to be used during extreme danger and is dangerous unto itself. It's a lesser of two evils argument. This is why you need in-person training to learn it and practice it under professional guidance. Again, do not do this on your own. Now, do your best not to fall on top of the person. However, you do want to lay on top of the person, using your body to shield the principal from debris and shrapnel. Again, the protector should also be face down. Use your hands to protect the back of the neck of the principal. Use your own legs to wrap around the principal's legs and draw them together. Your legs are on the outside, the principal's are on the inside. There should be no gaps in the principal's legs exposing any femoral arteries to danger. Just as before, your legs and the legs of the principal should point towards the explosion, reducing the silhouette. The protector is not in an optimal position, but the point is not to keep you safe, but to keep the person under your care safe. You do this because your life is less important than the person you're trying to protect. Now lastly, we're going to cover young children. Again, please, please, please do not be an idiot and practice this technique with real children. When I learned the technique, it was taught with dolls. We even practiced pulling them out of strollers. Again, there are critical nuances that cannot be covered in an audio program. Get live instruction from a certified professional instructor. This is just an overview and introduction, not training. When you go to the ground, you should be extremely careful not to crush the child. Adrenaline increases strength and decreases sensitivity. You could be hurting the child and not even know it. Use caution and be careful. Children are fragile. When you go to the ground, create a cavity for the child underneath you by propping yourself up on your arms and elbows. Keep them in tight to your body, elbows back. Use your hands to protect the side of the child's head and keep it pointed at the ground. A child might struggle with you and want to see what's going on. With really young children, such as infants, put your fingers into his or her mouth to open it slightly. Again, this is to help you protect the eardrums. Do not do this with an older child with lots of teeth, because you might just get your fingers bitten off for your trouble and succeed in nothing. Now, the rest of your body positioning remains the same, as discussed several times already. The difference is that you now have a child underneath you. Your hands are protecting the head and face of the child, rather than the back of your own neck. That's it. That's the overview of three taking cover techniques. The personal dive, protecting an adult, and protecting a child. Hopefully, this will better equip you for when you select a certified professional instructor to get real training. Again, this is not real training.
Gun Rights Radio Network has the best pro-Second Amendment, pro-gun rights podcast available on the net. The podcasts are absolutely free when subscribing using iTunes or Zune Marketplace. Or if you want, you can just listen from the website. Make sure you visit gunrightsradio.com to subscribe. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time.
Now on to our new section, emails. I'm actually going to do my best to make this a recurring segment on the full episodes, as opposed to the quick tips. What I'll do is grab a few emails that I received during the week and then read them on the show and try to answer them as best I can. I have a huge backlog of emails, and hopefully adding this segment will help me get through them. Also, if anyone wants to record a question, a comment, or correction, and then send me an MP3 file, those will be played in this section here. This week, I'll read an email from a listener outside the United States. He asked to remain anonymous. The email reads, "We've been renting our apartment for just over 6 years with no problems to report. However, 6 months ago, a new neighbor moved into the apartment that adjoins ours, and everything changed. For months, we've had to deal with their unreasonable levels of noise, shouting, screaming, banging, loud music, and partying until early hours of the morning, and, after not being able to get a resolution through direct contact, discussion with our landlord, the local council, and the police, we've decided to move out. What made this especially alarming was the factor that was pointed out by another neighbor, but something we already suspected, they are drug dealers. They always stay at home, are up at all sorts of hours, don't appear to go to quote-unquote work, yet somehow they still pay rent, and have unsavory guests that park outside for 5 to 10 minutes at a time, either he goes out to them or they go up to his apartment. These guests will visit at any hour of the day or night, and they're rarely the same people who return. So this is my question, although actually he asks 4 questions. How would you address neighbors that are disruptive, noisy, or aggressive? What should you do if you suspect them of criminal activity? Do you still address them, or try to avoid them altogether? What are the signs that something is not right and their activities may not be entirely legal? What should you explicitly not do in this situation?" So, thanks for sending in your email. This is a great example of something that can happen to anyone. With disruptive neighbors, all you can do is ask for consideration and report up to the landlord. In most cases, that's all that's required. Sometimes the police need to get involved when parties get out of hand. I admit that I threw a few parties in my younger days where the police came out for a visit. Those parties were epic. However, when real problems repeat and disruption is a regular item, especially during the work week, it's a real concern. Even greater is the threat of retribution by the person being reported. Now, again, this is pretty rare, but it does happen. There are the annoying neighbors, and then there are the crazy, nut-bar, not-right-in-the-head, dangerous neighbors. The listener is right next door to one of the dangerous kinds. The proper complaints have been filed with the landlord and the police, and yet the problem persists. All that can be done now is move. It sucks, but that's the truth of it. If the neighbors are dealing drugs, they're probably also doing drugs. That makes them extremely volatile and unpredictable. You do not want someone with access to your property whacked out on drugs who is mad at you or thinks you've done them wrong. All it takes is for that person to go on a paranoid bender, shoot through your walls, or lob a firebomb through your window. Yes, since it's an apartment, it'd probably burn his place down as well, but the person is not necessarily rational, if he even cares. So let's talk about other ramifications. This was demonstrated by a city that I used to live in years ago. They had just spent millions of dollars creating a new outdoor shopping mall. This area had a huge transient population. It's a nice way of saying homeless. It was a very liberal area, and there was an extreme tolerance for homeless and beggars. You could not take the elevators in the surrounding parking lots because of the stench of piss and crap. Any puddle you saw, you just assumed it was piss. We used to jokingly call those puddles mystery liquid, quote-unquote. As in, watch out, don't step in the mystery liquid. So the new shops brought in customers and money. There were bars, boutiques, restaurants, shops, and movie theaters. It was a weekend hotspot bringing in thousands of patrons. It was also a hotspot for beggars. They flooded the place to beg for money from the patrons. Within a few months, the drug dealers moved in. They were not selling to the patrons so much, but the beggars. Recall that a huge percentage of the homeless population are addicted to drugs. The money they collected from begging was used to buy drugs from the dealers. Then, in natural progression, gangs moved in to support the drug dealers. So within 1 year, this multi-million dollar shopping area became a gangland. Why? Drugs. So this wealthy, ultra-liberal city, we'll call it the People's Republic of Soviet Monica, did something really smart and against their nature, and it shocked the heck out of me. They evicted the homeless. When the consumers of the drugs were marched out of the area, the drugs and gangs followed. Within 6 months, the shopping center was back to being safe and generating revenue. Now, I'm going to refrain from any further political commentary. You're free to conduct your own research and come to your own conclusions. So what does this have to do with our listener? If the shopping center is a macrocosm, his apartment building could be a microcosm. There's a good chance that gang visits, gang fights, robberies, and confrontations are not far off. The crazy thing is, this can happen anywhere. It does not have to be a bad neighborhood. It can happen in a good neighborhood. I've lived in a really nice area where there was a quote-unquote gang house 3 blocks away. About twice a year, we heard gunshots from down the street. Welcome to the city. The only thing that can be done is move. It sucks, but the confrontation can be dangerous and fruitless when you're dealing with criminals. If they're dealing drugs for their income, you politely asking is not going to get them to stop. If the landlord will not evict them, your only option is to leave. If enough people leave, then the landlord might take action. However, you may not want to wait until that point, if it ever comes. So when you do move, do not tell anyone in the building where you're going. Just move. Disappear. If something happens and the police do bust them, they're going to look for a snitch. If they get busted right after you move out, they might wrongly blame you and come after you for retribution. If they can't find you, it makes it a lot harder for them to do something to you. Even if you just tell friends or other good neighbors where you're going, the bad guys might find out from them in an innocent conversation. You just want to disappear and be forgotten. Fighting with crazy neighbors is bad, especially if everyone owns their property. If you rent, you can move without much trouble. If you own, there are whole other levels you have to deal with. I have a couple of real stories to share in this regard. I lived in a neighborhood with a neighbor who used to go on drunken benders. He would throw dead rats and used mortar oil over the fence into his neighbor's yard. He would kick and break sprinkler heads if they got his car wet when he parked on the street. He would also threaten the gardeners when they made too much noise. What got him to stop? One of the gardening crews called the cops on him and he was caught in the act. He spent 4 hours in the back of a cruiser while the cops interviewed the neighborhood. He also went to court a few times. He became a good neighbor after that. Some family friends had a problem with one of their crazy neighbors. A few weeks after moving to their new home, they came home and found it vandalized. Someone had climbed onto their home and poured paint all over the roof and splashed it on the walls. After asking around, they learned that there was a crazy dude that lived down the block, and everyone pointed the finger at him. Fortunately, that was the only incident, and they never found any hard evidence against the guy. Now, in another example of things spinning out of control, I knew a girl in college who got into a pissing contest with her neighbor. It escalated to the extreme. The problem began with her dogs. The neighbor complained that she was throwing dog poop off her balcony into the bushes in front of his window and it was causing a bad smell. A completely legitimate complaint. And she was doing it. When her dog pooped, she just hucked it over the balcony. As payback for the complaint, she smeared dog poop on the guy's home doorknob. He responded by keying her car. She responded by breaking his car window. He put superglue in the keyhole to her front door. She superglued his entire doorframe shut. It just kept getting crazier and crazier. The landlord didn't know whom to blame, and apparently the dude admitted to one of the acts, and so he was evicted. The original victim was the one punished. She wound up moving out a month or so after the other guy for something totally unrelated. First and foremost, you need to protect yourself and stand up for your rights. However, understand that some people are not right in the head. Exercise your rights using the proper channels when filing a complaint. When that fails, take your money elsewhere. If the neighbor is a criminal and a drug dealer, just get the hell away. You are not the police, and you do not need that aggravation nor the danger. So, that'll do it for this section. I'm only going to read one email this week because my response was rather lengthy. But I think it was a good topic to bring up. Thanks for sending it in.
Hey everybody, we are
Lady Antebellum.
Before every show, we practice. Gotta be prepared.
Exactly, and the American Red Cross wants us to be prepared too. Prepared for disaster. This
world. Just take 3 steps to be Red Cross ready. Create a disaster supplies kit with water, food, and a first aid kit. Make a family communication plan, and listen to local radio and TV reports to stay informed.
It's that simple. To learn more, visit redcross.org or contact your local Red Cross chapter today. Thank you so much.
Welcome back. Okie dokie, here is a quick summary and reminder of our main topic, diving for cover. First, you want to bend over at the waist, full 90 degrees. Hit the deck. Get your head down. Get your nose down. Close your eyes. Put your hands over the back of your neck. Open your mouth. Your feet should be pointed towards the explosion, and your feet and legs should be together. And that will do it for this week. As always, you can follow my daily tips on Twitter and Facebook. On Twitter, I'm Practical Def, and Facebook is Practical Defense. I also invite you to check out my book on practical home security. It is currently available in DeadTree, commonly known as paperback, Nook, Kindle, and iTunes editions. Autographed copies should be available on my website by the end of the week. The URL is alexhaddix.com/book. If you have any tips you'd like to share with everyone, a comment on a show, or if you would like to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, write into podcast@alexhaddix.com. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe.
You can now hear Gun Rights Radio Network while you're on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. On-demand news, talk, and more on your mobile phone. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed and no memory or storage wasted. Available for your iPhone, Android phones, or your BlackBerry. Downloading is easy. Go to Stitcher.com or check out your app store. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Gun Rights Radio Network shows can be found under Sources.
Practical Defense is a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network at gunrightsradio.com. And that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense podcast. For questions, commentary, and topic suggestions, send an email to podcast@alexhaddix.com. That's podcast@alexhaddix.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexhaddix.com.
Kevin MacLeod.